Hi, I'm Audrey, Dad's daughter, Mom's too. I'm first going to read a letter that was written by Dr. Kristen Harris, and at the time she was in charge of the a department at Harvard, and currently Mom found her at Austin, University of Austin, and she is the professor of neuroscience and department chair. This letter was written in 96 when Dad retired, and luckily they've rekindled the friendship that always was there. Dear Ted, knock, knock, who's there? The best chairman ever. The best chairman ever who? The best chairman ever who? You, that's who, and that's no joke. Ted, my memories of NeoUCOM are without a doubt some of the finest of my life. While I know you recruited a pretty cheerful group, I also know that the tone of a department is set by the chair. I cannot tell you how much I appreciated the supportive and happy tone of NeoUCOM while I was there, and the high standard for excellence that was set by you and the group has stayed with me my whole career. It has been a hard act to follow. There are many chairs who could benefit from a short course on chairpersoning from you. I also remember you for the terrific neuroanatomy course at NeoUCOM. I still have my flashcards, sort of souvenirs. I understand that when you worked on that course all the time, I remember one funny time when you had received a memo from administration wanting you to account for the percentage splits of the time you spent on teaching versus research. Your response was that you wondered if the time you spent thinking about a lecture in the shower counted. Ted, your humanity is what made working around you extra special. It is that humanity that I've always felt when I think of my time at NeoUCOM Neurobiology and when I see you at the meetings. I look forward to hearing about all the fun you'll have now that you are retired. Retired, what does that mean to Ted? Fishing? Going to the cabin? Basking in the Caribbean sun? No. It's working on your computer course, right? Or more protest marches. Or how about that short course in chairpersoning? Oh, she calls it chair shipping. Have a blast at your party. All the best always. Affectionately, Kristen. I have always known that how lucky we are to have Dad. He let all the three of us kids know that he loves each of us the most. He taught the infinite nature of love by conclusively showing Dorianne he loved her the most. At the same time, Jim knew he loved Jim the most, and I likewise. Dad's key strength, of which he has a plethora, I believe is his incredible ability to inspire. Those around him literally catch fire. Dad is Mary Poppins. Grandma Gertrude, his mom, shared that Dad loved Mary Poppins so much as a little boy that he, with his believing heart, literally jumped from the banister of the second floor, umbrella in hand, with the faith that he could fly. The point is, even though he broke his arm, he still knew he could fly. Dad was a master teacher who drew the intelligence out of every individual under his teaching. At 12, one day I stopped by his lab at Case, found him dressed in a wild white wig and a lab coat with a student using an 8mm projector. Some would have snapped over my interruption. Dad cheerfully explained that he's a mad scientist dissecting a brain to refilm in reverse so his medical students could see him building a brain. I remember when he showed it, the part that he had dissected, a piece would just go right into place. Really, really stuck. Later, he and I wrote a small grant to fund a four-part class for the patients in the Brain Trauma Day Hospital that I got to coordinate. And it was using his BrainView's interactive neuro book for the layperson, so that survivors of brain trauma gained a basic neuro knowledge to better advocate and hold their own in speaking with the neurospecialists who often talked very down to them. Dad taught them just like any other medical student. I actually walked in one time at NeoUCOM when Dad was doing the three slide projectors at the same time. I don't think it was when he was wearing your glasses on his glasses. He took Dr. Chopko's glasses and didn't know it. But so I got to see him teaching medical students occasionally, and Dad taught the brain trauma survivors that were in our outpatient day hospital just the same. He drew out their confidence and ability, as he does with each and every person he ever taught, regardless of limitations. Learning is fun. It should be, it can, and it is. It's life-changing. Dad taught all of us who know him to take a stand, even when it's an unpopular one, to band together and gain strength with numbers, be kind and humble. He modeled the ability to apologize and diligently did so when he felt he'd overreacted or had done some sort of wrong. It's much easier to say I'm sorry when it's understood as a given. His example demonstrated that true, heartfelt apology is a reflection of strength, not weakness. Dad taught hope. He professed throughout my life to be an atheist. During these last months of precious time, particularly late night, we'd get into very deep topics, along with Bonnie, who we're forever grateful, who kept the thread of our communication and his hope together. When I explained to him what he'd taught me about love and said that you love each of us three kids the most, asking how that can be, Dad responded, "Oh, Audrey, that's a very deep thing you're saying." I said that I believe we are a reflection of our Creator who loves infinitely. His response, "Perhaps, but God is also a gentleman. As are you, Dad, a gentleman. You have always been a gentleman." He smiled with a glimmer that melted my heart. Dad is and always will be Mary Poppins, who taught me anything can happen if you let it. Never judge things by their appearance. Open different doors. You may find a you there that you never knew was yours. And finally, let the past take a bow. The forever is now. Dad, you are forever with us.
Well, I'm out of order already. Thanks for coming. This is a piece I performed, the last one I ever played for my father. Now has lyrics, with apologies to Beethoven. Goodbye, my father, farewell, our loved one. You'll be remembered in our hearts forever. He would say, "You're my buddy," or things like, "Nav shmaj gepap," not bad for a bathtub. "Taste the soup." "Funny, the smart pills taste a lot like moose turds." "See, you're getting smarter already." "Duffy's Tavern, where the elite meet to eat." "Duffy ain't here, this is Archie the waiter speaking." "Unaccustomed as I am to public speaking, Mama's on the roof." "So, life isn't like a fountain?" "A skunk sat on a stump. The skunk thunk the stump stunk, and the stump thunk the skunk stunk." "Remain seated?" So So I have a couple of letters to read, written about my father. One from his dear friend, best buddy, and teacher as well in New York State, Jim Clark. I have known Ted for 70 years. We met in our undergraduate years in college and have remained in contact since then. Both of us went to Cornell University for advanced degrees in different fields of study. Ted got drafted into the Army and I taught high school before beginning careers in higher education. We became very close friends, and although we have lived in different parts of the country, we've remained in close contact. Ted was the best man at my wedding. His recent death makes me feel like I have lost a loving brother. Ted was the most interesting man I have ever known. He had a thorough grasp of several fields, strong political views, and a marvelous teaching voice. I saw him teach a large group of medical students in a huge lecture room a few times. He spoke without a microphone, and even his whispers were easily heard in the farthest corners. He loved his students and spent time with them, often in his home. Ted was deeply involved in social issues concerning our country and the whole world. As younger men, we participated in several confrontations. We were in the thick of things in the People's Park at Berkeley, the war protests in Washington, and many smaller events. Ted wrote well over 100 letters to various newspapers, openly and cogently analyzing various solutions to urgent problems. Ted was blessed with a loving, close-knit family and literally hundreds of friends. He will remain in our hearts for the rest of our lives. This from Don Monroe, my father's very good friend. Dear family and friends of Ted Vanida, I am sorry that my wife Betty and I cannot be with you on this day when you celebrate the life of this truly unique individual. Some of you knew Ted by the names Dr. Vanida and Professor Vanida. I came into his life when he was finding other lighter occupations. I knew him by many other names. He was Samuel Clemens, alias Mark Twain, when he took the words of the great man to express his own political and ethical views of life. He was Julia Child when he tried to assure us that the chicken had not been on the floor too long to be inedible. He could play Bob and Ray standing on his head, at which time he was Ray and Bob. He was Lou Costello, except when he forgot his glass, and became Costello on the Lou. You could see it on his face, if you know what I mean. Then there were the times when he became very serious and played a Russian diplomat in a walk in the woods with an American diplomat, trying to solve the world's problems, and when he became the American atomic scientist Niels Bohr, when he visited with the German atomic scientist Werner Heisenberg in the play Copenhagen. When I last visited him in November, he still knew who was on first, what was on second, and I don't know was on third. And when you left the room, he never said goodbye. He said, "Remember, time flies like an arrow, but fruit flies like bananas." We will miss you, Ted, but we will never forget you. Anyone lucky to have known Ted Vanida, no big-hearted, warm, fun-loving guy with the soul of an artist and the mind of a scientist. The arc of my dear father's life might read something like a Charlie Chaplin film. Humble beginnings, a struggle against the powers that be, a bit of luck with a dose of success, love, truth, and comedy along the way, complete with a delightful, though bittersweet, into the sunset ending. You often just want the movie to keep on going. We'll miss him terribly. So long, Pop. We love you.
Hi, everyone. I'm Emily Smith, Ted's granddaughter. And first I'm going to read something from Mary Greer. As many have heard, Ted Vanida, our most spirited and passionate speaker, passed away peacefully some days ago. Ted was a true warrior against fracking and injection wells and so many other wrongs and injustices. As a doctor, teacher, and expert in the field of neurology, he made it incredibly clear that chemicals harm brain function and brain development. When Ted spoke, we listened and we learned. So I had something written, but I actually forgot that at home. So I'm just gonna go off from what I have in my brain. Many of you know Ted as professor, teacher, doctor, friend, but I know him as grandpa. and that's what he was to me. So first story, I'm going to start with fishing, one of his many loves. I learned everything about fishing from my grandpa, and now I can use that knowledge to impress people. So, because he taught me how to gut a fish completely by just pulling the bones out of the fish in the correct way, and I always thought that was amazing. He took me fishing up in Grand Rapids at Blue Water almost every day we were there, even when it was raining. And he always had his spots on the lake to go. Now, I wasn't very good at fishing, but whenever we came back into shore, he always told Grandma that I caught more fish, when really he did. We mentioned all of his humor and everything, but my grandpa was kind and loving. He loved his family more than a lot of things, and he would always put us first. He always loved family gatherings, and whenever anyone came to visit him in his last few months, I always loved coming up to visit him and hearing him ask for some ice cream. And I always wanted to give him ice cream. A lot of times I caved. My mom always told me the first words that he told me right when I was born is, "Good God, look at that frontal lobe." So, he knew to look deeper just than the surface. He inspired me since that day on to be very interested with the brain. And I remember when I got a concussion in my first year of high school, he was at every single appointment that I had. The last words he mentioned to me a few days before he passed, he just said simply, "Emily is my granddaughter." And I said, "Yes, Grandpa, that's me." He would always tell me how beautiful I was, or how good I looked, or how much he loved my hair color. No matter what it was. He didn't judge. He didn't judge. He just looked deeper than the surface. And that's where his kindness showed. I always loved to brag about him to my professors and my doctors. And actually, I went to the doctor's office a few days ago up here in Kent, and I mentioned him, and my doctor said, "Oh my gosh, I had him as a professor." I said, "No kidding." Because that happens a lot. And it always makes me feel smarter because, of course, I have the honor of being related to the great Dr. Theodore Vinita. Along with every good trait about him, he was my biggest supporter. My grandparents were always there when they could be at my tennis matches and any school event, graduation, everything, and that means the world to me. Even when he was in a wheelchair or had a limp, he would still show up and they would support me no matter what. My grandpa's my role model, and he will always be. None of us will ever forget him. I love you, Grandpa.
So we'll take some time now to share a few stories or memories about Ted from you. I want to begin with this one from one of my colleagues, the Reverend Kathleen Rowlands. She writes, "I remember Ted. Who could not remember Ted? Who could not be taken in by his enthusiasm for his compelling monologues, by the way he would corner you in a room with his thoughts? I remember Ted from when I was a college student, desperate to feel like an adult. Ted treated me like one. He never treated me like a naive college kid. He launched into every conversation with a degree of intensity that I interpreted as respect for my brain and sometimes my interest. I found out about swamplands in Kent and fracking in Portage County and beyond. I learned about the way the brain fires and misfires. We talked about liberal religion, its strengths and its failings. In the last conversation I had with him, he spoke of his granddaughter, Jim and Teresa's daughter, with his characteristic enthusiasm, with so much pleasure and pride for the child she was back then. Many of you have offered other testimonials about Ted's long life, his marriage to Swanee, the love of his three children, his illustrious career, his work as a dedicated member of the Unitarian Universalist Church of Kent. My relationship with Ted was one of just a few years, and then intermittently when I lived in Cleveland and our paths would cross through various denominational events. Yet the kindness and care that both he and Swanee extended to me in those early days has never left me. His curiosity about me, my life, my thoughts, left an impression on an impressionable young woman longing to be taken seriously. I was saddened to hear of his death, wanting that great mind to go on forever. Yet, as Ted knew so well, the brain has its misfires, and if we live long enough, it too needs to rest. So I send my deepest condolences to the Oneida family, friends, colleagues, and to all those gathered today, as well as these thoughts about a man whose curiosity about life and people extended far beyond his immediate sphere of influence, and in turn influenced my life. For that, I am deeply grateful. If you'd like to speak briefly about Ted, please raise your hand. I'll bring you the microphone and be sure to tell us your name.
Hello. My name is Bill Beckettall. Ted was my uncle, and I just wrote a few things here. We will always remember Ted's exceptional sense of humor, good nature, and his love of music. Fishing at Blue Water, we were talking about the great fish dinners we had at Blue Water, thanks to Ted's fishing and to Swanee's cooking. Blue Water will not be the same without him. We've had so much fun through the years and feel fortunate that we could have spent so much, some milestones, events in our lives together. Marge and Jim's 50th wedding anniversary, Cindy and Bill's wedding, JC and Aaron's wedding, Ted's 80th birthday celebration, and your 60th anniversary bash. To name a few. So many good memories through the years. He will surely be missed. Please accept our sincere condolences. What a truly difficult time it must be for you. And our hearts go out to you. We hope the many fond memories will have comfort for you. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Linda Bunyan. I'm one of those people that Ted didn't hire. Years later at coffee hour, I thanked him. And he said that would have been a bad mood for you. But anyway, one thing that has not been mentioned is his stalwart and staunch support of the medical library at what was then Neo-UCOM, and his advocacy for the library and for the librarian at that time. You may think that libraries are not political, but you would be mistaken.
Right behind you.
My name's Vivian Sandlin, and I'm a member of the Unitarian Universalist Church of Kent. And I think we have to acknowledge how much Ted and Swanee together have given to our church, and how much they've done for this community through our church with their social justice work. I've known Ted and Swanee for probably 25 years, working and doing social justice work through the church. And from the time when we protested against the U.S. invasion of Iraq, remember that? Ted and Swanee worked against fracking. They worked on environmental issues. Ted was a peace activist, of course. And one of the, it seemed like a small thing, but one of the things he decided to do was to do counter-recruiting at the high school in Kent, so that while there were military recruiters recruiting people into the military, Ted set up a table where he tried to convince people not to join the military. And he did that with the permission of the school, which was very interesting. Another thing Ted did that may seem small, but I'm sure some folks remember it, is a few years ago, at Hogwarts, Kent Hogwarts. We have a Hogwarts branch in Kent. And Ted brought in a human brain for the kids to see and touch. Now, I admit, I did touch it, but it was a little creepy to me. However, it was Ted, you know, the educator and activist. And our church is better because of Ted and Swanee. And it's our task now, I think, to continue the social justice work and to carry Ted's legacy on into the future.
I'm Ray Michelson, and I remember meeting Ted in 1969, which was in Cleveland, and it was in the aftermath of the awful massacre that was known as My Lai, in which 504 unarmed, innocent people were slaughtered by U.S. troops. And in Cleveland, we decided that we needed to do something, so we started a vigil that began on Thanksgiving and ended on Christmas Eve. And in trying to line up people to participate, one of our mutual friends said, "There's a guy named Ted Vanita, and he's got a really good voice, and I know he'd be with us." And so he was a part of it. That's where we met. Now, listening to his academic colleagues, I think it's fortunate that I didn't have a tape recorder when we were together at Piedmont Lake, because I heard other views about the faculty. Fortunately, I have a very slippery memory, so I can't recount it. But I think it was also very good that Ted went into biology and not physics. And I say that because on one occasion at our side-by-side cottages on Piedmont Lake, we had stacks of logs that we'd cut, and we needed to split them for firewood. So Ted came up with the idea. I had a long, long rope and some pulleys, and a long earth mover, just like a spade with a sharp end. So Ted said, "Well, let's set the log down. We'll put a pulley up in the tree, and then we'll pull it up and let this thing come pummeling down. It'll split the logs." Unfortunately, it bounced off, and that was that. But we all loved him, and we'll miss him.
Thank you.
Dave Riccio, faculty member at Department of Psychology at Kent State. You've all heard that Ted was a wonderful teacher, and he loved to teach. After he retired from NeoMed, he learned that I was teaching a seminar in the department, and he said, "How about if we team teach that?" Now, he wasn't getting paid, he just wanted to do that for fun, so I agreed, and what we decided is that we would split the hour and a half, that he would do the neuroanatomy and I would do the functional behavioral side. It wasn't very long before I discovered I hardly had to do any work at all, because in the hour and a half, he'd run for an hour and a quarter, and I could just wing it from there on because everything was done for me. So that was my experience, one more example of his enthusiasm about teaching, and indeed he was a wonderful teacher. I might also add that my dermatologist on the west side of Akron is a man that went to NeoMed. I mentioned Ted's name to him, and he immediately began to sing, "Where is the weenie in the brain?" So he did indeed remember very well.
So my name is Heidi Schaefer, and I have the privilege of being a friend of Ted's for many years and doing some social justice work with him. But I was also one of his yoga teachers, and I see there's another one or two in the room here, and also people that took class with him. Ted and Swanee would come to class, and Ted would always sit up front or set up his mat right next to me, partially because of his hearing, but I think it was also because he liked to talk to me during class. when I would say something that sparked an interest of his. Maybe it was something from his physical therapy days, or certainly something about consciousness in the brain, and we kind of had a running dialogue about that. It was a pleasure. He loved moving his body and the stretches and all that. But at the end of yoga, there's a time called Shavasana, which is the time where everybody's very quiet and we settle down. Ted always had a very active mind and maybe an active mouth as well. So I had various strategies as to how to work with that active mind. And I would put eye pillow over his eyes, maybe that would settle him, and sometimes that worked. And I would put my finger to my lips, like a librarian, and that would work sometimes. But the thing I really discovered was that if I would go over and hold the base of his skull, he would relax. He loved that. It was like candy, I think, for him. But it was the thing, and he would be quiet, and everybody would have their quiet time. But he always said, and I think he was somebody who liked rituals too, because at the end of this, whenever I would finish holding his head, he would say, "Well, and like the robot Jaime always said in Maxwell Smart, thanks, Max, I needed that."
My parents loved Swanee and Ted, and we were sort of family friends, but it was mostly my parents. But I was doing some pre-med work at Case Western Reserve, and I asked Ted if he could write a letter of recommendation for me. And so a few weeks later, I get a letter in the mail. "Dear Joy, I've made a terrible mistake. I sent the wrong letter." And he had written two letters, one ostensibly for the medical school and one as a joke. But he told me he sent the joke, and I wish I could have found it before I got here. It started out, "Dear sirs and madams, you should take that girl, Joy Marshall. She's real cute. Not as good looking as her mother, but much better looking than her dad." Well, of course, the joke was on me. Of course he didn't make that mistake. And when I went for my interview, the guy who interviewed me said, "You know, I knew, just because of one letter we got from you, about you, we knew you would be an important part of our class." It turned out that they had given that letter to everyone on the Board of Admissions.
And your name?
Joy Marshall.
Joy Marshall, thank you.
Kendra Higgs Pacifico. I had the privilege of being Ted's wigmeister.
My name is Mark Stevens. I'm a member of the Unitarian Universalist Church of Kent. In November of 2018, we had a Thanksgiving dinner, and I sat across from Ted and Swanee, and his memory was kind of fading at that time, but I was able to share a good joke with him. He was looking for Swanee, and he kept saying, "Swanee, Swanee," and he was looking for her, and he just didn't see her. And I thought of the song, "Swanee, Swanee," about Swanee River, how I love you, my dear old Swanee. And I go, "Ted, there's a song you could sing to your wife," and we both started singing, "Swanee, Swanee, how I love you, my dear old Swanee."
Thank you. There are many, many, many stories we still have to be told. We could probably spend all afternoon sharing stories about Ted. I would invite you in the days, the weeks, and the months to come to reach out to Ted's family as you remember these stories, to share those stories with his family, and let them know what a difference he made in your life. Going to invite us now into a few moments of silence for contemplation, to gather our individual feelings and thoughts, and to reflect on the meaning of this occasion. In these quiet moments, let us say farewell and remember Ted as a loving, generous, and gracious person. Let us take these moments to offer our gratitude for the gift of his life and to say thank you in our hearts for his companionship. Let us also reassure ourselves that even though his physical presence is gone, through the mystery and power of love, he lives on in each one of us, for nothing truly kept in our hearts is ever lost. We'll enter silence.
Thank you.
The horizon of death is a great mystery on the landscape of human experience. We don't know with certainty what lies beyond, but we can imagine the peace of sunset with all uncertainty and fear left far behind. We can believe in the very fiber of our beings that the great promises of life are not lies, the immortality of beauty and virtue, the power of genuine thought and honest love. We can trust that beyond absence, there is a presence, that beyond the pain, there will be healing, that beyond the brokenness, there will be wholeness, that beyond the hurting, there is finally peace, and that through peace, there is perfect love. That love reassures us that Ted's spirit is at peace and beyond all harm. As he was good, that goodness will be his guardian always. As he was loved, that love will attend him forevermore. The final duty of love is to lay aside with tenderness and reverence the broken vessel from which the essence of Ted's being has gone, trusting that what was best in him is not lost, but has joined the moving sea of creation once again. Ted's body was cremated, and his ashes will be scattered at a later time. To the sunrise and to the clouds, to the breeze and to the stars above, into the mystery of eternity, we commend the spirit of our beloved Ted. May we treasure his memory evermore in our hearts. Remaining seated, I invite you now to join in singing the song of peace, Dona Nobis Pacem. The words are Latin and mean, grant us peace. The words are in your order of service. Poet Mary Oliver says, to live in this world, you must be able to do three things. To love what is mortal, to hold it against your bones, knowing your very life depends on it, and when the time comes to let it go, to let it go. We extinguish the chalice now to bring our time of worship to its close and to symbolize Ted Vanita's death, acknowledging that we have loved what is mortal and accepting the truth that the time has come to let his physical presence go. We now light a candle of memory, which symbolizes Ted's love for each of us, a love that is his legacy to us. May the memories of him burn brightly in our hearts, reminding us of all that was true, good, touching, funny, and inspiring in his life. We invite Hal and Katie to lead us in Amazing Grace.
Thank you.
Immediately following this service, you are invited to greet Ted's family, enjoy lunch, and continue the remembrance of Ted's life downstairs in the social hall. And now, since it is left to us to continue in the world, may the life and death of this beloved man recall us to our own destiny, strengthen us to continue the work to make real Ted's dream of a world where there is justice and true peace. As we honor his life and memory, let us not be overly concerned with the length of our lives, but rather attend to the quality of life, seeking to be our truest, most compassionate, loving selves. Knowing that life is so precious and so fragile, let us rededicate ourselves to cherishing even more fully this gift we've been given, and to letting those whom we know we cherish know that we love them. For as this occasion reminds us, we never know when they will no longer be with us. The love we can no longer give to our beloved Ted, may we give to those who have need of it in our world. And as we return to this world after this sacred time together, may we know that we are held by a love beyond our understanding, a love that sustains and embraces us. May we also be renewed in the knowledge that as we remember Ted, his light continues to shine within each of us, part of love's light, which reveals to us all that is beautiful and good and worthy of joy and hope. May love renew our faith to believe the great truths beyond the limit of our sight, that beauty endures, that goodness is real and true and present in the world, and that love will outlast time and death and even all the stars. And now may we go from this place, hallowed by our completion of love's final task, in quietness and confidence to take up once again our waiting lives. Let us go forth to live so as to be worthy of Ted's memory and one another's love. May deep, abiding peace be in your hearts and give you comfort and strength in this hour, in the days to come, and forevermore. May it be so, and amen. You're welcome to be seated for the postlude.